Okay. Topic of tonight's shiur is Gidrei Tzniut. Between mixed beaches and separate buses, where do we draw the line? This is part of a series. I gave a sicha, which some of you were at on Thursday night, and I'll, Bezrat Hashem, be giving another sicha this coming Thursday night. As I mentioned, for those of you who are there, I'll just repeat what I said, since not everyone was there, obviously. This has become a hot topic over the past 2 weeks here in Israel. I'm sure you've seen things in the newspapers, maybe even seen some protests on the streets. There's been a lot of talk in recent weeks about sort of a counter-reaction that's going on in Israeli society against what is perceived to be the position of the religious community, or the position at least of certain people in the religious community. The catalyst for this has been, among other things, some incidents in Beit Shemesh that began this past summer and continued throughout the year. Again, there are teachers who live in Beit Shemesh might be able to describe this a little better. I don't live in the city there, but there's apparently a religious girls elementary school, which opened up this year, moved into a new building at the edge of a neighborhood where there's a large Haredi community, and there is a small element from within that community that apparently didn't want the school there, and they've been protesting outside the school, and they've been, there hasn't been much real physical violence, but there's been a lot of verbal violence. And a few weeks ago, some reporter made a big deal out of this and interviewed a 7 or 8 year old girl who, from a religious, actually American Olim family, who was crying and explaining how she gets yelled at and spit at and called prutza and all these terrible things because these people are protesting the fact that her school is there and they consider that she's not tzanua enough for them. And in the secular press, at least, there's been this and a few other incidents that have happened recently, together with the fact that for whatever reasons, that is not the topic of tonight's talk, for whatever reasons, there are certain groups of people, both in the secular community and within the religious community, who have an interest right now for political reasons in whipping this up a little bit. But basically, there's been a lot of talk over recent weeks about something that has become termed Hadarat Nashim. Hadara is a modern Hebrew word for exclusion, the exclusion of women. And there's been a lot of perception or discussion about the perception that religious Jewish community basically locks women away and excludes them from all sorts of areas of public life. And if you read these articles written by secular people, they're sort of lumping together all sorts of things that in their mind create this continuum. Things that I think to you and I would not at all be in the same category, but someone who's sort of outside of our community, is not living a Torah lifestyle, maybe isn't able always to see the differences. So, you know, men spitting at and yelling at little girls and calling them zonot and prutzot and things like that. Buses that, there are certain bus lines in Israel serving religious communities where there's separate seating on the bus for men and for women, men in the front, women in the back. An emphasis, of course, on laws of tzniut in terms of the way women are to dress, and increasingly strict interpretations of what that means. A number of recent incidents where there were public, even government events, where women were not allowed to appear publicly. There was some ceremony recently where, I believe here in Yerushalayim, where there was some government-sponsored program, and there was a number of people being given awards, and there was a ceremony honoring the people getting the awards. And they were, each one was called up to receive his prize or his certificate or whatever it was. And two of the awardees were women, and they were asked not to come on stage. Their names were just announced, and they weren't allowed to come on stage out of sensitivity to some of the people there. There's a religious organization that does very, very important work, a religious organization that deals with issues of fertility and halakha called Machon Pua. Actually used to be a few blocks away from MMY in our old building. And they have a conference every year, which is attended by hundreds and hundreds of rabbanim dealing with all sorts of medical issues in halakha. And they have a policy that the speakers are only men, which they do in order to you know, make the thing available also to those men that won't want to listen to a speech by a woman. And there are people that are reacting against that and viewing it as something that's not acceptable. The fact that here in Yerushalayim, you'll see very few pictures of women in street advertisements, and even in certain newspapers and even children's books, you'll sometimes see little or no pictures of women. The fact that men are not allowed to listen to women sing, and there was an incident recently in the army, a few incidents actually in the army, where there was some kind of military ceremony, and there was a musical group of soldiers performing, and it included women soldiers who were going to be singing, and there were some religious men soldiers who got up and walked out because they felt it was wrong to force them to, you know, to be in the situation of kol isha. General halachic things like the fact that in a shul there's a mechitza and the women sit in the back or up in the balcony, and that they can't read from the Torah and they can't, you know, lead the tefillot. All these things, which I don't think we would put, for example, mechitza in the Beit Knesset and spitting at little girls in the same category, but from someone looking from the outside in, you know, there seems to be this one general concept, and it all adds up to a vision of us by secular people, or some secular people at least, that we practice hadarat nashim, that it's our goal to exclude women from public life. Sometimes we've even been compared to extremist Muslim groups like the Taliban. And basically the perception, at least among some people, and you can read in articles which say this very, very clearly in the newspapers and in other places on the internet, that basically we view women as subhuman creatures who on the one hand are sort of necessary because you sort of need women in the world, but on the other hand they're dangerous to men. And therefore what we do, according to this view, is we sort of force women into submission, force women into hiding, we make women cover their bodies, we make them not show their faces too much either, and basically blend into the background as much as possible, push them off to the sidelines, keep them out of public life, and create a world where the public space belongs exclusively to men. That is the perception. On Thursday night, I gave a sicha, and I argued then for what I believe is the correct interpretation of the Torah sources, and I argued that the Torah certainly doesn't say that, and that the Torah actually says that women and men are absolutely equal, of equal value and of equal status, although there are, in certain areas, different responsibilities and therefore different treatments in certain things. Separate but equal, that's what I said then. The perception, even if that's correct, which I believe it is, the perception still remains. This coming Thursday night, Bezrat Hashem, I'll discuss attempts to perhaps address modern sensibilities towards the exclusion of women from certain things in the Beit Knesset and other ritual matters, Zimun, Limud Torah, and whether we should be making changes, shouldn't be making changes. That's what I'll talk about on Thursday night, Bezrat Hashem, for those who are interested. But tonight I want to talk about the question of Tzniut. And what Tzniut really means, and what is the correct, you know, place to draw the line? Do we need separate buses or not? Or, you know, where in between separate buses and mixed beaches? You know, where, how do we figure out what the correct approach is and what's this whole controversy about? I just want to make clear, I'm not tonight discussing the current, I'm using the current controversy to discuss the issue, but I'm not discussing the current controversy tonight. And the to really understand what's going on now, as I said, you need to discuss tzniut, but you also need to discuss a bunch of other things, including how Israeli society functions and why it is and that people, that sometimes these differences are exaggerated and what we can do about it, and also certain other things, the role of rabbis in community and how that's changing over time. Those are not things that I'm talking about tonight, and I'm also not talking about Haredim tonight, and I'm deliberately not going to use that word, even though it's used in the press. I try not to use words like that in general. I try to talk about issues, but if we are going to talk about different hashkafot and different philosophies, that's not what I'm talking about tonight either. Tonight, I'm talking about the issue itself. The issue, the narrow issue of tzniut and the debate about what tzniut really means. And I think the reason why there's such confusion about this is that we're caught between two extreme viewpoints, which are both wrong, and the truth is somewhere in the middle. On the one hand, you have the viewpoint of the secular world of modern Western society. On the other hand, you have the extremist formulation of the most extreme views of the things that I just mentioned here. some of which is undeniably not halachic. There is no halachic source anywhere that can justify, you know, terrorizing a child, even if she's not dressed properly, bon agid. So at least some of what we talked about here, there's absolutely no halachic justification for. But it's coming from, I think, at least in part, a reaction to what's going on the other side. In other words, what I'm trying to say is that the reason that this is such an issue in our generation is because the society around us really has absolutely no concept of tzniut. Now, I want to make something clear. In general, and this is also not the subject of tonight's shiur, and this I will, Bezrat Hashem, talk about maybe around when we go to Bnei Brak, there is a significant and legitimate debate within the Torah community about how much interaction we should have with the secular world around us and what our attitude towards that world should be. And there are definitely those who advocate having as little as possible involvement with and contact with that world, studying as little secular studies as possible, having as little interaction with the world around us as possible. And there are others, and I certainly put myself in this camp, who don't say that at all and actually advocate involvement with the world around us. I went to university, and I encourage people to go to university, and I read newspapers, and I am involved in the world, and I think that's correct, and I'll talk about why at another point. But certainly it is my view, and this is a legitimate debate, but it is my view that there's much value in the world around us. There's much in the secular society in the world, whether we're talking about in America, whether we're talking about in Europe, whether we're talking about in secular Israeli society. There's much value. There's many things that certainly work well with Torah values. There's much agreement between us and them, if you will. And not only that, there are things we can learn from them. The Gemara says, Yesh chokhma bagoyim. And there are things that we Torah-observant Jews can learn from the non-Jews, from the non-Jewish world, and there are aspects of secular society that we should even be imitating. But this is not one of them. And on this issue, on the issue of tzniut, the world around us really has completely gone over the deep end. There simply, in contemporary Western society, is absolutely no concept of tzniut at all. Particularly in that aspect of tzniut, which is the one that gets all the attention nowadays. It's not the only aspect of tzniut, but the aspect that has to do with interaction between men and women and with sex and sexuality in general. The entire attitude towards this in the world around us is one that I think from a Torah perspective can only be described as sick and perverse. Whether it's attitudes towards how one should dress, or even if one needs to dress at all, whether it's attitudes towards sex and sexuality and what's a healthy expression of human sexuality and what is not. Basically, in today's society, I don't think it's an exaggeration to say that not only does anything go, and really is almost nothing that would be considered perverse or unhealthy or damaging, but not only that, but even people's natural hesitation at certain things is going to be something which is sometimes considered unhealthy. And people can even find themselves pressured on this matter. On university campuses today in the United States, I'm sure you all know it, it's considered common practice in dormitories, and in some universities it's even mandatory. There was a Supreme Court case in the United States about this a number of years ago. That there's only one bathroom for men and women to use together. And if anyone says, I just don't feel comfortable with that in some of these places, some places will treat that with some degree of respect or more than some degree. And in other places, you'll find yourself, if you say, listen, I'm not comfortable with this, you'll find yourself, as a group of Orthodox Jewish students in Yale University a few years ago, who sued and lost in the Supreme Court, said that they just didn't feel comfortable, you know, showering and using the bathroom in the, you know, close proximity of the opposite gender. They were told that there's something wrong with them for thinking that way, and they have all these unhealthy psychological issues that they have to work out, and, you know, even extreme formulations like that. So, when secular society today tries to express values that they profess, when it comes to these areas, a lot of times the message gets clouded. Western society today claims to be opposed to abusing women, claims to respect women and value women, and accuses us with these laws that we have of somehow denigrating or subjugating women. But when you take a step back and look at it, you'll find that it's not always that way. Just 2 weeks ago, there was an article in the Jerusalem Post. I don't know how many of you saw it. The article was basically making the point that I made at the outset of this year, not the point that I made, the point that I described, you know, lumping together all these things and talking about how religious Judaism, you know, excludes women and banishes women from society and doesn't respect women. And one of the arguments was, one of the main arguments was that in Yerushalayim, you know, it's hard to find pictures of women in street advertisements, and that proves that women aren't respected, women are, you know, excluded. That was what the author of this article wrote.
Is the author a man or a woman?
The author, I believe, was a woman. Now, the newspaper article was accompanied by a photo. Now, I know for a fact that the photos that are placed in the newspaper next to the articles are usually not placed there with the intention of the author, and the author is not even consulted. I know this as someone who has had an article published in the newspaper with a picture that I did not even know was going to go in there, and had nothing to do with the article. But somebody, the picture is put there usually by some copy editor whose job it is to make people want to read the article. So the article was about the fact, or a major point in the article was about the fact that there are no pictures of women in street advertisements, and that this is denigrating to women. So the newspaper placed a photo of a bus stop with an advertisement featuring a picture of a woman, because that's what the article was about, except that the woman in the photo was... It was a very provocative photo, and one that I don't think, at least, was very, very respectful of women. It was one of these ads where women's bodies are used to sell various types of products, and the type of thing that feminists often criticize as being denigrating to women. And here is an article that's arguing that people are denigrating women, and the newspaper that publishes that article sticks a picture next to it, which I think, you know... flies in the face of what's professed in the article. Or I'll give you another example. I noticed something about 7 or 8 years ago that I had seen my whole life, and one day I just noticed it, and you've all seen it too, and I'm not sure if any of you ever noticed it, but now that I'm pointing it out to you, you'll notice it. You can't see it now, you have to wait for the summertime. But here's what happened. A number of years ago, again, 7 or 8 years ago, I read an article also in the Jerusalem Post, which I wish I had saved, because I've referred to this article so many times, and I didn't save it, I threw it out, I've searched for it online, I can't find it, I don't know the author's name, I wish I had it. But this was also a person, I don't know if it was a man or a woman, but it was complaining about, again, the perception that Orthodox Judaism, you know, suppresses women, and speaking specifically about the code of dress that's required, that, you know, Orthodox women are required to, you know, cover their arms and their legs, etc., and that this, the author portrayed this as our way of having the men control the women by forcing the women to cover their bodies. The author argued the men are actually psychologically enslaving the women, subjugating them, and getting them to psychologically internalize the idea that the men are in charge and that they controlled and beaten into submission, and it's a terrible thing. And of course, this article got me upset. It happened to be that summer, we had a summer program here in MMY, and I was teaching whatever I was teaching, something completely different. But the girls on that program, that particular summer, they asked me if I could give them a shiur on the laws of tzniut about dress. Literally, you know, the stuff Rabbi Lerner spoke about a few weeks ago, elbows and knees and necklines and different opinions. They wanted a chazara on that topic. So they asked me, could I give them a shiur on that topic at some point? Over the summer, I said, sure, and I hadn't taught that in a while, so I was preparing it. And one day, these thoughts were on my mind. I had just read that article that bothered me, and I was in the sugya because I was preparing to give that shiur. And I was sitting on a bus, and this is July in Yerushalayim, very, very hot outside. And I'm looking out the window of the bus, and I see, you know, a young girl walking down the street, unfortunately not wearing much clothing, which is common in the summertime here and in other places, you know, wearing something that I'm not sure you can really call a shirt, and, you know, a very short pair of shorts, and that was basically it. And she was walking with a young guy that I guess was her boyfriend, and all of a sudden I noticed something that I never noticed before, which is that he was wearing clothes. He was fully dressed. He was wearing long pants, he was wearing a shirt. And she wasn't really wearing clothing. And then I started looking around and noticing that this was a pattern that was going on all over the place. It's not that people didn't see the need to wear clothing. It was only that the girls and the women were not really dressing all that much at all. And then I started to notice this, and I started to see that this was a pattern. And it happened to be that that particular summer I did some traveling. After the summer program ended, I was in the States, I was in Australia that summer, and so I was like watching for this wherever I went, and I noticed it was true. I remember that summer I had to spend about an hour and a half sitting in Ben Gurion Airport. I wasn't even flying that day, it was a different thing, but I had to sit there for about an hour and a half. So I did a little survey, because most of the women, except for the religious women, were wearing sleeveless tops. And I said, I wonder how many men I can find wearing a sleeveless shirt. I sat in the airport for an hour and a half where almost every woman that wasn't religious was wearing a sleeveless top. Do you know how many men I was able to find without sleeves? One. And he was about 68 years old. That was it. And I said to myself, what's going on here? And I realized that if there is today a culture that defines a particular, and I saw this also in other places. I was in a fancy hotel that summer. I don't know why I was there. I probably wasn't staying there, but I remember walking in the lobby. And, you know, there was like a restaurant in the lobby of the hotel. And there were people, you know, a few couples out to dinner. And the same thing, the guys are in jackets and ties, and the women are all in these like half-dressed things. But the guys are wearing jackets and ties because they're going out to dinner. And I noticed this pattern consistently on three different continents. And I realized that if there is a culture that uses, that creates a sort of code of dress for women and uses that as a way to make men and women both feel that somehow there's a difference of equality between them, I don't think it's halacha that does that. I think that's the contemporary secular society that's created this situation. So, and it's not only true about dress, it's also true in behavior and in what types of things people talk about and in what forums. There simply is no concept of sniut at all. And the attitude towards sex and sexuality is very, very, very unhealthy. So that's one extreme. Now, that influences us. And I think it influences all of us. It's impossible for us to live in a society that we live in and to be surrounded and bombarded from every corner with images and with conceptions and not to have it affect us. It affects us. It affects all of us. And in our community, in my community at least, I can say that that's one of the reasons why, maybe the reason why, tzniut is one of the things that's a weak point, that we're not able to really always live up to the standards that we should, and it's something that's a constant struggle for us. Some people, therefore, have developed an approach which basically says that the way to fight against these influences is we have to go to the opposite extreme. We have to build walls that are higher and higher and higher. If they're going off in one direction and we want to prevent ourselves from being influenced, we have to go all the way to the opposite extreme. And for that reason, and you'll see people who explain this explicitly, for that reason we have to be even more and more and more strict with various aspects of tzniut is a counterbalance to what's going on out there, because that's the only way we can protect ourselves. And that is what's behind at least some of what you're seeing nowadays and some of the constantly increasing attempts to separate between men and women and the various things that are going on. And if you say to these people, you know, there were no, you know, even 20 years ago in Yerushalayim, there were no separate buses. Everybody, including the great Gedolim, Rav Shlomo Zalman Auerbach, the Chazon Ish, they all, if they rode on a bus, they rode on a bus where men and women sat together. This is a new thing, and nobody can argue otherwise. But they'll tell you that it's true, but we need to do this because we need to react against increasing decadence in the society around us. The problem is, at least in my opinion, that this doesn't work. This increasing, constantly increasing attempt to fight against the lack of tzniut around us by overemphasizing tzniut among us, it doesn't work. And it doesn't work for at least two reasons. First of all, because by reacting to a society that's absolutely obsessed with sex and trying to react against that, we can wind up being equally obsessed ourselves. And let's look at the first source on the sheet I gave you. This is a little anecdote about Mori Verebi, Rav Amital Zatzal, a word about Rav Amital. Rav Amital was the founder of Yeshivat Har Etzion. I was privileged to learn in the yeshiva when he was one of the Rashi Yeshiva. Passed away just over 2 years ago. No, less than 2 years ago. Just over 1 year, about a year and a half ago. And he was a very great man. And the word I always use when I describe him is a very wise person. He had a perception, a certain wisdom about life that was just so rare. And this is a great story from somebody that was in the yeshiva in one of the early years of the yeshiva, sometime in the probably in the 1970s. So I'll read it. You can see the story. The guy who writes this article says, "Lefnei zman ma ishtatafti b'shiur shel Rav Natan Greenberg Shlita Bogeri Yeshivat Har Etzion Hamechahen Kayom." Kerosh Yeshivat Breslov B'Yishuv Bat Ayin. Okay, so the guy who's telling the story, he's quoting from this Rabbi Greenberg in Bat Ayin, which is a yeshuv near Alon Shvut, and he had studied in Yeshivat Har Etzion. B'malach ha-shiur nizkar ha-Rav Greenberg b'divrei tochacha u-musar ha-skel she-shama mipi moreinu ha-Rav Amital Zatzal. Maseh shaya kachaya. This is the story that he told. Ha-Rav Greenberg, v'imo kvutza mitzumtzemet mitamidei Yeshivat Har Etzion, kiblu al atzmam linhog b'minhagei chasidut u-prishut. A group of these guys, when he was in yeshiva, him and a group of his friends decided that they're going to take upon themselves all kinds of extra practices to make themselves very, very spiritual. Bein hayeter, among the other things, hechlitu lihimana ad kama shenitan mimiyat marot bilti tznuim. Therefore, one of the things that they took upon themselves is to try as much as possible not to see things that were not tsanua. Lefikach, and therefore, hechlita hachavura, שטרם הירידה מהאוטובוס הנושא מאלון שבות לירושלים, יורידו כולם את המשקפיים, כך שגם אם תעבור סמוך עליהם אישה בלבוש בלתי צנועה, בלתי צנועה, לא יוכלו לראותה. So they took upon themselves something which they knew was a chumra, they didn't think this was required, that when they would take the bus and go into Yerushalayim from the yeshiva in Alon Shvut, before they got off the bus, they would take off their glasses and walk around without glasses on, so that even if there are women walking around that aren't properly dressed, they won't be able to see so much because they're walking around without glasses. And that's what they did. And they felt that this was a way to reach extra levels of Kedusha, to take off their glasses. Vayihi hayom, de'echad mibnei ha-chabura hustovei b'chutzot Yerushalayim, kamuvan, b'li mishkafayim, one day one of them was walking around Yerushalayim without his glasses. V'inei b'darko nikra ha-Rav Amital. And he happened to bump into Rav Amital, who lived in Yerushalayim, didn't live in the Gush, and he met his teacher, Rav Amital. Harav Amital panay al oto bachur b'tmiha. Hey, chana mishkafayim shocha. He said, what happened to your glasses? Halaz nisa litchamek. The guy tried to, he was embarrassed. Ulashiv shenishbirao shevdu. He said, they got broken, they got lost. Ach, Harav Amital b'chochmato hevin miyad b'meh medubar. Rav Amital wasn't fooled. He understood exactly what was going on. Yamim achadim lachar mikin, hizmin lachadro et b'nei achavura kedosha vizbir. A few days later, back in yeshiva, he called the whole group into his office and explained to them that he thinks this is not a good idea. And this is what he said. Kasher adam mistovev barachov umarkiv mishkafayim humizahed kol nimtza svivo anashim, nashim, balei chayim, amudei teora v'chein hala. You walk around with your glasses on, you see everything that's going on. You see men, you see women, you see children, animals, lampposts, cars. V'ulam. אם אדם אינו מרכיב משקפיים מחשש שמא יתקל באישה בלבוש בלתי צנוע, בלתי צנוע, הרי שהרחוב מתמלא כולו בנשים בלתי צנועות. כל עץ, כל עמוד וכל רמזור נדמים עליו מרחוב כאילו היא אישה בלבוש בלתי צנוע. What's happening? The guy is taking off his glasses so that he won't see women who aren't properly dressed. And he's walking around all the time not really able to see, because he fears that he's going to meet women that aren't properly dressed. And all the blurry shapes he sees around him in his mind become improperly dressed women. That's all he's thinking about. His whole point is to avoid from thinking about this. And he's walking around the street not able to see something, and therefore he's thinking about it all the time. And in his mind's imagination, everything that he can't see and he's avoiding seeing, is that a tree? Or maybe that's a woman. Is that a traffic light? Or maybe that's a woman. And that's what happens psychologically, because he's... the attempt to run away from something forces us to think about it. And if our whole point is to try not to think about things too much, we're winding up thinking about them more and more. Rav Greenberg Siyem V'Amar Shibimambat Lachor, this rabbi who's telling the story now, much older, looking back, says, Ein Safek Shet Tzadku Divrei Rav Amital. Lemor Tikun Midat Hatzniut, if you really want to improve your abilities to grapple with these challenges, the way to do it, Tikun Midat Hatzniut Doresh Zikuch Shel Olam HaMachshavot V'Harigishot V'lo Asara Shel Meshkafayim. It requires working on what's going on inside and not just taking off your glasses. So the first problem, as I said, is that by attempting to avoid the problem of obsession with these matters by creating additional safeguards to it, winds up actually creating that obsession. And if you want to read another piece about this, I gave you in the back here this little English piece on the last page. You can read afterwards. This is a blog of a friend of mine, Rabbi Alex Israel, a guy who was in yeshiva with me, a neighbor of mine also, teaches in I forgot which yeshiva he teaches in these days. I think in over here in Eretz Tzvi, I think. But in any case, he also wrote a piece on this, which I think is makes a very similar point, which I think is worth reading, but you can read that afterwards. There's also an additional problem, and this is a much more fundamental problem, and this is really what I want to focus on in the time I have left tonight. And that is, referring to tzniut in these terms confuses two completely separate things. There are texts in our sources that people misunderstand, and this is also, Rabbi Israel makes this point also, texts in our sources that people misunderstand because they confuse two different things, and they think that these two things are one and the same. There is an isur for people, particularly for men, for women as well, but particularly for men, to look at people or even objects that can stimulate Yetzer Hara for these types of things. And this Isur, if you read the sources, at least on the surface, the Isur is very, very chamur, it is very, very strict. Let's take a look at a few of the sources on the page and you'll see what I'm talking about. Gemara and Brachos, source number 2. Tanya. This is a Gemara. We're reading it now on a superficial level. I'll try to put it into a different halakhic context, which I think is the correct one in a few minutes. But certainly, at the very least, when you read it on a surface level, you get a very strong message, and I think the sources intend to give a very strong message. Tanya, lo yehalech adam achorei isha baderech. A man is not allowed to walk behind a woman. Because if he walks behind her, among other things, he's constantly looking at her because she's in front. Afilu ishto, even his own wife, he's not supposed to walk behind. Nizdamnalo ala gesher. If he's crossing a bridge and all of a sudden he sees a woman, yisalkenel etzdadin, he has to run past her so that he doesn't see her any more than necessary. V'chol ha'over acharei isha benahar. They used to have to cross the river sometimes. They didn't always have bridges to cross rivers. Sometimes the way you would cross a river is to walk through the water. And if he has to do that, he should not. If a man walks behind a woman while crossing the water, Rashi explains here that that's a particularly bad time to be for a man to be standing behind a woman because, you know, she's going through the water and she might have to pick up her skirt because of the water and it might not be so, her body might not be completely covered. He might wind up looking at her. But look what the Gemara says about that. Kol ha'over acharei isha banahar ein lo chelek leolam haba. And how about the next statement? Tana Rabbana. Hamiratze ma'ot li'isha miyado liyada kedei listakel ba. A man who goes into a store and needs to pay money and he starts counting coins from his hand. There's a, let's say, a woman in the store who's collecting the money, the cashier or whatever, and he's counting coins and handing them to her, and he's sort of doing this in order to have an opportunity to interact with her and to look at her. So what do we have to say about this man who's like utilizing this, you know, a situation in order to get a chance to look at this pretty woman? Afilu yesh biado Torah u'masim tovim kimoshe rabbeinu lo yinakem idina shel gehenum. You hear that? This man, afilu yesh biado Torah u'masim tovim kimoshe rabbeinu, and this is the only thing he did wrong, is he counted coins over to this woman and sort of, you know, looked at her while he was doing it. He's not going to be saved from gehenum. Tosfos, you can look at sort of limits this a little bit, but the message is very clear. And this gets translated into halacha. If you look in the Shulchan Aruch, source number 3, this is the Shulchan Aruch. Tzarich Adam, Evan Ezra, Simon Kafalef, Tzarich Adam, Litrachek, Me'anashim, Me'od, Me'od. Ve'asur likrotz biyadav o baraglav. You're not allowed to wink at a woman. Ve'irmoz be'inav, lachad me'harayot. Ve'asur lischokima, you can't laugh with her. La'kel rosha kenegda, to get giggly and giddy. This is what we call flirting in plain English. O lahabit biyofya, not allowed to look at her, gaze at her beauty. Ve'afil lahariach besamim shaleh asur, to smell her perfume is asur. Ve'asur listakel benashim she'omdot al hakfisa. You're not allowed to look at women when they're doing laundry. What's so exciting about that? Laundry, you used to have to go into the river to do the laundry, and again, you sort of have to get half undressed to get into the water, so it wasn't a tzanua thing to do laundry. Let's say the woman hangs up her clothing to dry, and her dress is hanging on the clothesline. She's not in it. She's not there. It's just a dress hanging on the clothesline. He's not allowed to look at the dress, because he's going to start thinking about her. Shema yavo leharher ba. Pagai isha bashuk, if he meets a woman in the street, asur lahaloch achareha, he can't walk behind her. El aratz, he's got to run ahead. Umisalkal etzadim, ola acharav, he's got to put her to the side or behind him. V'lo yavor bepetach isha zona, he certainly shouldn't walk past the house of a prostitute. Filu b'richuk daod amot. V'amistakel, afilu be'etzpa ketana shel isha. Even if he looks only at her little finger, v'nitkaven lehanot mimena, but he's admiring that beautiful finger. Ki'ilu nistakel b'veit ha-torah, if he may as well have looked at the most private part of her body, it's all the same. Basul lishmoa kol erva, he can't listen to her singing, or lirot tzaro, to see her hair. V'mitkaven le'echad midvarim elu makino toma kat mardut, it's an issur d'rabbanan, as opposed to actually touching her, which is an issur d'araisa, according to the Rambam, and according to Pesach of the Shulchan Aruch elsewhere. So we see here a very long list of prohibitions of things that particularly men are not allowed to look at or smell or interact with. Just one second, Mariah, let me just read a little more. And the next halacha, which is halacha vav, and siv vav, and the same thing, ein sholim b'shlomi shaklal. You're not allowed to say hello to a woman or even ask how she's doing. Afilu ayidei shliach. You can't say, how's so-and-so? I heard she was ill. Is she feeling okay? You're not allowed to do that. Afilu ayidei ba'ala. Asur lishloach ladivrei shlomim. Even to her husband, you can't say to her husband, please send regards to your wife. That's asur, according to Shulchan Aruch. Avam mutar lishol ba'ala eich shloma. To her husband, you can ask how she's doing, but you can't directly send regards to her. To anyone else, you can't even ask how she's doing. Okay, so talking to women is certainly out, or at least maybe not all forms of talking. Maybe you can have a conversation about a particular topic. Excuse me, how much does this cost, or something like that. But any type of hello, how are you, is completely prohibited according to the Shulchan Aruch. So, we have here a series of laws that restrict very, very much people's vision, people's thoughts, people's actions on these issues. Yes, Ayala?
Are some of these prohibitions put on laws that you're needing?
That's an excellent question. The answer is absolutely yes. And how is that possible, and what does that mean, is the subject of a shiur I'll give you Bezrat Hashem at the end of the year about dating. But I think that's a huge... I will give a shiur Bezrat Hashem about halachot of dating. And I think that is a huge, huge point. And what that means, and how it's possible halachically, and what the ramifications are, Bezrat Hashem I'll talk to you about then. But this is one area of halacha. That people, particularly men, are restricted in what they're allowed to look at, and who they're allowed to talk to, and what they're allowed to do. There's a whole other area of halacha that defines how people are supposed to act and how people are supposed to behave. In this particular context, we're talking about, there's one halacha that says a man's not allowed to look at a woman, even her etzpa ketana, by the way, but even more so if she's not properly dressed, and even if she normally is properly dressed, but she happens to be doing laundry, or she happens to be walking through a river, so he's certainly not allowed to look at her. And there's a whole separate area that talks about how a woman is supposed to dress. What we call tzniut. And people make the mistake of assuming that those two things are the same. In other words, people make the mistake of assuming that the reason why a woman has to dress a certain way is because otherwise maybe a man will look at her. And therefore, what basically happens is there is an assumption that anything that has to do with this area of tzniut is, first of all, based on that. Anytime we tell a woman, at least, this is how you have to dress, and this is how you should act, and this is what you should or shouldn't do, and this is where you should or shouldn't go, that we're telling her that because she may otherwise cause problems for men. That, and therefore, what does that mean, basically? That the responsibility for preventing men from violating Averot is understood to be primarily, or at least partially, but I think actually primarily, according to this thinking, the woman's responsibility. And that if a man does fail in this area, it's the woman who's at fault. That's what comes out of this type of thinking. This is wrong. And I'm going to show you right now that this is wrong. Becca, you want to ask me? I'm just running late, so I answer your question. Great. Turn, we'll come back to source 3 Aleph there. Turn on to source number 4. There's a sefer called Hatznei Alechet, which I like very much. We have it here on the shelf. It's a great sefer. It's a set of 3 svarim, actually, having to do with various issues involving women in halakha. Sefer Hatznei Alechet is about issues of tzniut, and I like it a lot, even though I don't agree with all of his conclusions, because it's very, very good. It brings all the sources, and more than give you conclusions, it gives you the source material and different opinions, and you can really learn the sugya. It's an excellent sefer. He quotes here 2 sources who ask the following. Girls sometimes mention to me the mitzvah of tzniut. I want to tell you something. There are 613 mitzvot in the Torah, and tzniut isn't one of them, and it's not a mitzvah derabanan either. It's not a mitzvah. The word tzniut is a term. It defines something, but there is no separate mitzvah in the Torah called tzniut. So therefore, what's the halachic basis for it? The question that's dealt with by these 2 sources, Rav Moshe Feinstein and Rav Avadi Yosef, let's say, again, we're talking here about a woman, even though these laws apply to men as well, let's say a woman walks out on the street dressed inappropriately. She's not tzanua. What isra is she violating? There's no mitzvah called tzniut. So which one of the mitzvot in the Torah or derabanan, what exactly is she violating? What was that? No, that's not what Rav Moshe says. That is not what he says either. Rav Moshe says, let's read it instead of guessing. Igor Moshe Yordea Aleph Simon Pei Aleph Binyana Malbushim Sheba Binyida Zot, America. The kind of clothing that we have in this country. He's talking here sometime in the 1960s, I think. Bigdei Nashim, or even the Bigdei Nashim, Sheyesh Behem Pritzut Mamash Shenasu Mechadash. I can only imagine what Rav Moshe would say about the clothing that people are wearing today. Bigdei Nashim Sheyesh Behem Pritzut Mamash, absolute immorality Shenasu Mechadash. Even though Shebavanotenu Arabim Gam Yisraeliot Milubashot Bahem, even though some Jewish women wear them also, Yesh Lachshivam Kechukot Ha'amim Mitzad Etzem Pritzut Shebahem Umimele Yesh Lesor Begadim Eilel Yisraeliot Gam Mitzad Azharat HaTorah Uvichukotehem Lo Teilechu. If you look at this context in its total, look at this paragraph in the context of the total tshuva, the question of Moshe was dealing with. This is, again, in the 1960s. You had Jews who came over from Poland and from other places in Eastern Europe where they used to dress a certain way. You know, in black clothing or whatever was the style of dress that way. And they came to America and the styles were different. Men were wearing suits and ties and other types of clothing. And there were people who questioned whether it's permissible for Jews to change their style of dress from the way they used to dress when they lived in their Jewish community in Poland. Were they violating the law called V'chukoteim lo telechu, which is an Issa d'Oraita, by wearing contemporary Western clothing? And Rav Moshe discussed this. There were poskim who felt that it would be an isser, for example, to wear a necktie or a Western suit or something like that if it wasn't the style that Jews used to wear, because you're basically copying the goyim among whom you live. And Rav Moshe ruled that that's not the case, that it's permissible, that there's no problem with wearing Western styles. You don't have to wear, you know, specifically styles that go back to Europe or whatever. At the end, though, he says, but that's true in general for men's clothing and women's clothing in general. If the issue is just that the style is a contemporary style. But these women's clothing that have pritzut mamash, that is an isodoraita, and that is v'chukoteim lo telechu. That's Rav Moshe's conclusion.
To wear
not any style, to wear immodest clothing. But notice what he didn't say. He didn't say that the reason why it's usher, in other words, he says that if a woman dresses that way, she's imitating a non-Jewish practice which is against the Torah. He doesn't say that she violates what? The law, that she violates the prohibition in the Torah of causing somebody else to sin. There is such an iser. What's it called? Lifnei iver lo titein michshol. That Rav Moshe doesn't say. In other words, what I just said people think, which is that men aren't allowed to look at women who are dressed inappropriately, or even women who are dressed appropriately they're not allowed to look at. And therefore, if a woman dresses inappropriately, she's going to be guilty of causing him to sin. That is exactly what Rav Moshe didn't say. He said what she's guilty of is acting in a manner that a Jewish person is not supposed to act. It's got nothing to do with who sees her. It's something completely different. In other words, the man's not allowed to look at her, perhaps. But that's not why she has to dress the way she has to dress. And that's not the way she has to act the way she has to act. She has to do that because that's the way a Jewish person is supposed to act. Rav Avad Yosef, in his tshuva here, the next one, says something similar. Isur Nashim Letzeit Birchovot Ha'ir B'smalot L'lo Shar V'lim. What's wrong with wearing sleeveless? He Isur Chamur Biyoter, as he quotes the Gemara, and he asks, what Isur is it? And he says something a little bit along the lines of what Avi said before. He doesn't quote Kedoshim Tiyu, but he quotes Psukim that talk about Kedusha, Chukim Lo Tovim Mishpatim Lo Yechayu Be'em, V'lo Yireh B'chai Irvat Avar V'shav Me'acharecha. And then he does say, he does mention Lifnei Iver, which Rav Moshe didn't, but he mentions it as a side point. In the second paragraph he says, Davar Barur Shenashim Sholchot B'Rechov B'Videi Pisuk Ke'ela Obrot Gam Al Isur V'lifnei Iver Lo Titein Nechshol. So Rav Moshe, what people think is the main reason for this Isser, or for this practice, Rav Moshe doesn't discuss it all, and Rav Avadya mentions it, but as a side point. But let's understand something. Even if that's true, that a woman who dresses provocatively is guilty, in addition to just doing something that's inappropriate and incorrect, and counter to the Kedusha that Jewish people are supposed to have, she's also guilty, perhaps, of causing men to sin. Let's understand that there are limits to this. And therefore, there are limits to how much men should be able to demand from women of this. You know, maybe it's one thing to say you have to wear clothes and you have to cover your arms and your legs. But at a certain point, if you start telling people that they have to not walk on the streets or walk in different sidewalks or sit in different places in buses and things like that, at a certain point, it certainly cannot possibly come under the category of Lifnei Iver Lo Titein Nechshol. And let me explain, let me prove that halachically. Let's say, for example, in Isser in the Torah, it's usher to eat a cheeseburger. Right? It's an Isser d'oraita, basar b'chalav. So if I would eat a cheeseburger, I would violate an Isser d'oraita. If somebody, let's say Helene works in a place, well, I don't know why she'd be working there, but somehow Helene has a cheeseburger. I don't know why she has one, but she has a cheeseburger. And or she's in a place where there is a cheeseburger. And I ask her, could you please give me that cheeseburger? Because I want to eat it. If Aline hands me the cheeseburger, she's assisting me in doing the Avera. So in that case, she would be violating Lifnei Iver Lo Titein Nechshol, depending on the circumstance, maybe on the Daraisa level, maybe on the Darabanan level, that's a detail. But if she's going to assist me by handing me the cheeseburger, she would violate that. Certainly, if somebody would try to go out and entice me to eat cheeseburgers, if someone would come along and give me a whole speech about how delicious cheeseburgers are and tempt me and try to convince me to eat the cheeseburger and I would eventually give in and eat it, that person would certainly be guilty of Lifnei Iver Lo Titein Nechshol. But let's say I do something else. Let's say I walk into my local makolet and I say to the owner of the makolet, listen, I have a real problem. I love cheeseburgers and I cannot control myself. And I'm eating cheeseburgers. And he says, hey, that's terrible. That's basar b'chalav. That's an issur d'oraisa. I say, yes, and it's your fault. My fault? I said, yes. You sell hamburgers and you sell cheese. And every day I come into your store and I buy the burgers and I buy the cheese and I go home and I make a cheeseburger. I want you to stop selling cheese. For sure, I said, I'd rather have the burger than the cheese. So, stop selling cheese. He says, I don't want to stop selling cheese. I have to make a living. People want to buy cheese. I said, yeah, but you're causing me to sin. Is there any way in which I could argue that it's his responsibility and that he's violating Lifnei Iver Lo Titein Nechshol by selling cheese? It's true that if that was the only store I had access to and if there was no cheese in the store, then I guess I couldn't eat cheeseburgers. But that's not his responsibility, right? In other words, now let's translate that into our terms. If a woman does something, which certainly if it's deliberately designed, as some of the clothing unfortunately is, most of contemporary clothing, unfortunately, is. If it's deliberately designed to be provocative, then you can argue that she's violating Lifnei Iver, and even then, it's not the primary problem. But once she's doing something that can't reasonably be considered to be a provocation. And if the men come along and say, yeah, but we can't control ourselves, and it's because of the society around us, at that point, it can no longer be the woman's responsibility to hide herself. If men say, you need to wear a burqa because I can't look at your face, there's no halakha like that. And there's no way that one can place that responsibility on the women. That's not what lifnei iver l'titei mechshol means. That would be tantamount to telling the makolik guy that he's not allowed to sell shoes. So therefore, the approach that says that we have to place all these restrictions on women because that's how we're going to fight against the pritzut in the society around us, I think it's wrong because I think it backfires and it winds up making us even more obsessed. But even if you would accept that it would be helpful, there's no justification to demand this of women under the guise of lifnei iver lo titein mechshol. And therefore what we have are these two extremes. We have the secular world, which is totally off the derech, if you want to call it that, the society of the mixed beaches and worse. And we have the overreaction to that, the demand for separate buses and worse. And the question is, where can we find the right balance in the middle? I'm just running very late, so if you don't mind, I'll take all questions afterwards. I want to give you what I think, in brief at least, are the halakhic guidelines here. And the starting point of the halakhic guidelines are that the sources that we read a few minutes ago in the Shulchan Aruch are not quite as black and white as they seem. Meaning those sources are making a very strong point, and they're clearly emphasizing that there's very serious Yisurim here, and God forbid I'm not in any way trying to minimize that point. However, there are layers of nuance that aren't immediately apparent, that someone, you have to study the halakha a little bit more carefully to really understand what they're saying. For example, there are people that will tell you that it's also for men to look at a woman, and there are men who will try very hard not to look at women. But it never said that. It never said that men are not allowed to look at women. If you go back to the Shulchan Aruch, what it said is asur, is lehabit biyofya. It certainly didn't say lirot, that he's not allowed to see women. And it didn't even say that he's not allowed to look at women. It didn't say it's asur lehistakel. It said lehabit biyofya. He's not allowed to stare at her because he finds her beautiful. He's not allowed to deliberately stimulate his yetzer hara by looking at her. That's not the same thing as saying he's not allowed to look at her. There's a layer of nuance there that's much more subtle. And many of the halachot are misunderstood by overgeneralizing. But even more importantly, and this next statement might sound a little bit radical, but it's not. And I'll prove to you that it's not. Not all the things we read in the Shulchan Aruch are true halacha l'matzah today. Some of them are no longer true. Now, I'm not a Reformed Jew. And I do not believe that halacha changes with the times. The title I put on the sign outside describing the shiurim was called Applying Timeless Torah to Changing Times. Halacha never changes. But that does not mean that every sentence in the Shulchan Aruch remains true. And the reason for that is because what halacha is that we take halachic principles and we apply them to real life situations, what's called metziut. And if the metziut changes, then the psak halacha changes. So there can be things that it was said in the Shulchan Aruch that were reflecting the application of halachic principle to a certain reality. And if our reality today is different, then, in fact, the law is going to be different. So, for example, I'm not going to be able to do all the sources on this page, but, for example, I showed you halacha vav that says that it is prohibited for a man to say hello to a woman. Sheilat shalom. There are certain communities where where people are makbid to follow that halacha literally. But it is widespread practice for this to be ignored. And I certainly have seen great Gedolei Yisrael saying hello to women with my own eyes. I even once was speaking to a Rosh Yeshiva who's very well respected, who happens to I have the privilege of knowing him personally, and he knows my wife. And at the end of the conversation, he said to me, "And please give my best to your wife." And I remember saying, "Hey, that's against the Shulchan Aruch." Right? And of course he knew that. But this halacha in the Shulchan Aruch doesn't apply to our reality today. And this is seen from a number of sources. But if you look at source number 6, I'm not going to read them inside, but the Aruch HaShulchan says it explicitly. Maharam Shiki quotes there, also says it explicitly. But I want to read from the Ritva. The Ritva is a Rishon, not necessarily halacha l'maaseh, but it's an important point here. If you look at the Ritva, source number 5 there, at the very last Ritva, Masechet Kiddushin, the Gemara there makes a statement. His girsa seems to have been a kol lefi dat shamayim. In our text of the Gemara, it says hakol l'shem shamayim. And the Ritva, and that says v'chein hilchata, that kol kefi masha adam makir ba'atzmo. All of these rules are dependent on a person knowing himself. Im ra'ui lo lasot harchaka liyitzro oseh, if he feels that it's necessary to place barriers to his yetzer hara, he should do it. Vafil istakel b'vigdei tzivonim shel isha asur. And therefore, for example, when the Gemara said he's not allowed to look at a woman's clothing, even if she's not wearing it, the colored dress or whatever, that was talking about a person who recognizes that this is something that he's going to, that's going to be necessary for him. But if he understands that he's not going to be turned on by that dress, then he's allowed to look at the dress or at the person. If he knows that he can ask a woman how she's doing and it's not going to cause a problem, then he's allowed to. And he quotes here a whole list of sources in the Gemara where the rabbis even touched women, rabbis, Amoraim, who would pick up the kala at the wedding on her and dance with her sitting on his shoulders because he says, it doesn't mean anything to me, and other sources like that in the Gemara. And at the end he says, but you have to be a person who's able to do that, and not everybody's able to do that, and you have to know yourself. Now a person, so the Ritva says explicitly that these halachot are dependent on the individual. Now, a person might be able to say, listen, the Gemara says you can't do this, but it's okay for me because it's not going to have an effect on me. He might be able to say that because he's a huge tzaddik, like the Amoraim that they were talking about there. Or it might be for a different reason entirely. The reason that Sheilat Shalom, for example, was considered to be something that was asur, to ask, let's say, a married woman to say hello to her, ask her how she's doing, is because it was a society where that wasn't typically done. If a man would go over to a woman and say hello to her, or ask how she's doing, or send her regards, that would be something in that cultural context which was out of bounds. That would be a clear message that he's interested in her, and these crossing boundaries that are not allowed. And it would mean something to him, and it would mean something to her. In our society, there are things like that as well. But it's not saying hello. Today, if I say hello to another man's wife, nobody thinks that that's going to cause anything. But if a man would, for example, if he would call her up and invite her to go out to coffee with him, just me and you, so we can have a nice chat, or go for a walk in the moonlight or something like that, that would certainly be asur. So it all depends on the situation. And to take halachot that were formulated in one context and to try to apply them to a different context as if the context hadn't changed is going to produce a distortion of the halachot. So therefore, if you look, for example, and I can't read it inside, but for example, the requirement for separate buses, there is no such requirement for separate seating. If you look at source number 7 in the Gersh Moshe, he talks there about the subway, right? In the second line, Loshech lachush mi lalechet b'subway u'bibases, buses. Okay, Rav Moshe was asked a question by someone in New York City, where if you travel during rush hour in New York City on the public transportation, there's often tremendous numbers of people squashed into the subway trains. And it's not just a question of sitting next to a woman. It's not just a question of seeing women. It's typically a question of people being pressed into each other's bodies very, very tightly. And it's absolutely impossible to travel in these things without being in these type of situations. And a man asked, am I allowed to go to work? I wind up squashed against women all day long on the whole train ride. And Rav Moshe Paskin that it's permissible because that's not your intention and you're not trying to, you're just going to work. And unfortunately, this is what has to be done. And if you can avoid it, you should try to avoid it. And then he says at the end, but if you know that it's going to cause you to have a Yetzer Hara, then you're not allowed to go. But most people can go to work and, you know, it's not comfortable even. No one really enjoys it. That's just the way it is and it's fine. So to argue that you have to have separate seating on buses, I don't think there's any halachic basis for it. And even if there is a halachic basis, you have here, for example, Rav Moshe Feinstein, one of the great gedolim of our generation. I'm already over time, so let me just say otherwise. You can also look here at the other sources that I don't have time to go through now that explain these points a little further. Let me just summarize what I think is some of the key points that we need to keep in mind on this issue. I think that everybody has to be committed to proper behavior, hitnahagut snua, and everybody, men and women, have an obligation to work on themselves to prevent themselves from thinking improper thoughts and for stimulating their yetzer hara. But not always is the way to do that to build walls that are higher and higher and higher. That doesn't always help. Sometimes it causes, in fact, the opposite. And therefore, personally, and I think it's that there's legitimate debate, and one can have a range of halachic positions here. Personally, I'm fairly lenient on some of these matters and fairly strict on others. I think it's very, very, very important for people to be very scrupulous about the way they dress. I think it's very important for people to be scrupulous about the way they act and the types of interactions they have with the opposite sex. But for example, I do not think it's prohibited for, let's say, boys and girls, even before the age of marriage, to talk to each other. When I do give you that shiur at the end of the year, I will tell you that when you're ready to get married, it's a mitzvah to talk to boys. And I'll attempt to prove that. But even if you're before that, even if we're talking about teenagers, I personally do not think it's prohibited. I think it's allowed for boys and girls to talk to each other and even to have some type of social interaction. But there are definitely things that are prohibited. There's a tshuva of Rav Moshe, which I also gave you. If you read source number 8, about second to last source, and you can look at this outside. This is great. This is a great tshuva. It's a guy who wanted to have a girlfriend. And apparently his Rebbe was telling him it's not allowed. You're not allowed to have a girlfriend. And he didn't believe his Rebbe. So he wrote a letter to Rav Moshe Feinstein. He says, am I allowed to have a girlfriend? And he says, I don't want Musar, and I don't want you to tell me that it's not, Mamash, read the tshuva. It's exactly in these words. I don't want you to tell me that it's not Ra'ui, and it's not the way Yeshiva Bachar should act. I just want to know, is it really Usar? Rabbi, where does it say it? I remember saying things like that to my Rebbe in high school, but this guy sent a letter to Rav Moshe Feinstein. And Rav Moshe took him seriously and wrote a tshuva why it's Usar to have a girlfriend or a boyfriend if it's not for the purpose of marriage. So you can read that tshuva. And I think it certainly is prohibited to have those type of interactions if it's not for the purpose of marriage. But I do not assume that that means that we can't talk to each other. And someone will come along and say, as many rabbis do, but wait a second. If you put teenage boys and girls in a room together, for sure there's going to be histoclus. You can't have a teenage boy in a room with pretty girls and have him not think in proper thoughts. And you know what? I agree. It's not possible. So then why am I letting him go into the room with them? Because it's also not possible for him to be outside that room and not having improper thoughts. And it's not clear to me that keeping him out of that room is going to make it less likely for him to have those thoughts. In fact, the opposite is very likely the case. That's a position that I have, and you could definitely argue with it. But the point is, and therefore, I think we have to acknowledge the fact that there are some different positions here. If you take the buses, for example, I can't see any real source that could obligate such a thing. But if someone told me that they would, prefer not to sit with the opposite sex on buses, I think that's something that I could respect. And certainly, as I just showed you, the Ritva, who says that you have an obligation to do what's necessary to deal with your own yetzer hara. If somebody says, "Listen, I need to be away from the women," I could tell him, I could quote Rav Amital and ask him if he thinks that's maybe going to backfire on him, but in the end of the day, if he thinks that's going to help, he has every right to try to do something, provided it's done in a way that doesn't infringe on other people. And I think if we would all respect each other on both sides a little bit more, I think that the things would work out much better. I would even make a suggestion. If people want to have separate buses, in a way that doesn't offend anybody, and that actually improves the level of tzniut, I would suggest putting the men in the back and the women in the front. Aside from making clear, I'll be done in 1 minute. Aside from making clear that we're not dealing with Rosa Parks, and that we're not trying to relegate women to a backseat role, and aside from things my wife points out, that a lot of times you have women who are pregnant and the back of the bus is much more difficult for people who are nauseous and those types of considerations, it also solves much more practical issues like, if the men are in the front, then they have to sit there watching all the women walk towards the back. If you want to have a section in the back for men, you could even hang up a curtain. If they would make a bus with a men's only section in the back couple rows, and even with a curtain, anyone, men who wants, can go sit there, nobody would complain.
They could do it with the Munster
Yeah, I've ridden I rode on that bus once, or a few times when I used to live in Muncie. Except then when the bus makes a sharp turn and I can't see what's going on the other side of the curtain and I fly through and land on some woman's lap on the other side of the curtain. Didn't work so well. I also had an aliyah in the Lincoln Tunnel. That was an interesting experience. Anyway, they have davening on the bus, of course. I davened at the early minyan, but I had an aliyah. Yep, Kriyasator. Okay, anyway, I guess that's it for tonight. We'll continue this on Thursday.